Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Welcome, welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Shout out to any new listeners who are joining us for the very first time. We're happy to have you on board. For those of you who have been here from the start, you already know the drill. We live and die by this team just like the rest of you, and we make no apologies for that. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining me on the show tonight from Reading, Pennsylvania is Micah Storms. Micah, how are you?
Jason, I'm well. I am past the point where I'm letting the Red Sox ruin my night. I have officially come to terms with the season. I did that about maybe a little over a week ago. Am I frustrated by this series? 100%, but I can just let it go because to me, I'm looking at 2024 and beyond, and it's disappointing. It's not where I wanted the team to be with 2.5-3 weeks left, but I'm not letting it ruin my night. I'm still going to sleep just fine, and that's where I'm at right now.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, there is a sense of inner peace you get from no longer bashing your head against the wall, trying to convince yourself that this is a playoff team. You know, it's some of us realize what the reality is, but hey, you know, that's just what we do over here.
I did that for a very long time, and I admit I'm an optimist. I want to be, but then I feel like it leads you to a little bit deeper cut than you really needed to give yourself.
Well, welcome to the right side of history, Micah. We're happy to have you here. Also with us on the show tonight from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you doing?
I am doing splendid as always. Red Sox, 5 games back. I think they lost a half a game this series. Toronto has slipped into that third place right now despite losing today. The Rangers are well on their way to losing to the Houston Astros, so it should stay right at 5 games. But don't get comfortable in fourth place. The New York Yankees have won 5 games in a row, and they're 1.5 games behind. So we might be in the cellar again for the third out of 4 years in the Bloom era. So we'll see how that goes. But I picked a sweep, and I did admit on that prediction show that game one was the most winnable for the Red Sox, and that is the one that they did end up winning. Tampa blew a 3-0 lead for that to happen. So is what it is.
Yeah, it's sad to really think about that. Last place is not out of the question just yet. For those of you who peep the schedule, the Red Sox have 4 against the Yankees next week. So that could definitely turn the tides on that one in terms of who finishes in last place, because they are running out of time for sure. And this series did not help for any who had those wild card aspirations. Oh, they're not too far out. They can sneak back in. Red Sox do what they always tend to do. They shoot themselves in the foot, and they're even further back now. And here we stand. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Rays. As much of a tumultuous season as that team is having, they can still put together some wins, and they can still make your life pretty miserable. So let's get straight into it. Let's get into our bottom 5 list for this series. Micah, lead us off. Who's coming in at number 5? Or I guess I should say, what is coming in at number 5?
I feel like I've done 80% bottom 5 lists since I've joined the podcast, and I'm hoping next year the tides turn. But coming in at number 5 is a little bit of an outside-the-box one. It is Tropicana Field. And the Red Sox end their 2023 campaign in Tampa, going 1-6. So just brutal there. And then if you go back to last year they were 1-9. So according to my calculations, that puts them at 2-15 over the last 2 years. And it's really just the disparity between this team that has kind of led the division over the last 2 years and where the Red Sox are trying to get to. There's just a big gap between these two teams. And the Red Sox sometimes look like a team that could compete, but the Rays do it pretty consistently all season long. And that's the difference between these two teams. And, you know, when you go 1-6, that's 5 games below 500 right there. You got to gain those games somewhere. And that's challenging to do. And I am so sick of Tropicana Field. This ballpark is a joke. We saw it in full effect in this series. Abreu, I don't think the ball hit the catwalk, but it definitely probably he lost it. He took his eye off it, couldn't find it again in the roof there, and he ends up dropping it between Yoshida and him, which led to 3 runs. And then we saw Devers. I mean, that ball, I really think off Glasnow on Wednesday, I think that was a home run. I really think that would have been gone. That ball was smoked into the air and it hits the ceiling somewhere. Devers gets a double. It's just so stupid. Like, it makes no sense that you could hit something in the air in fair play, but yet the play continues. I don't understand that. There was less than 20,000 fans in the last 2 games, and this is the second best team in the American League, and they can't get anybody to show up. It's just the whole stadium's a joke. They need to relocate. Major League Baseball needs to do a better job of getting them out of there, and it needs to happen soon because nobody should be playing on that stupid turf with a stupid dome. I hate when the Red Sox play there. It's just 6:40 start times. Everything about it just drives me nuts, and I just – the Red Sox can't win there, and it's pretty obvious. I think the last time they succeeded was in 2021, but I feel like they haven't played well there for, it feels like, 2 decades.
Terry.
Well, as far as moving out of Tampa, I think the pressure is going to be finally on them. I think they're front and center now that Oakland has seemed to have resolved it by formally announcing they're moving to Vegas. So I can't think of another team that wants to relocate or build a new stadium. I'm sure others might want to tentatively. Kauffman Field is old, and I think they did mention it in the last series. But the Trop, like, without looking, what year do you think that opened?
Oh, it had to have been, what, 96, 97, right before the team got in?
It was actually earlier than that.
I was going to guess 99.
1990 is when it first opened. So this isn't even a new stadium with a flawed concept. It's just... it's a relatively old stadium by most metrics. I mean, just off the top of my head, Kauffman's older, Fenway's older, Angel Stadium is older, Dodger Stadium or whatever they call it, Chavez Ravine. It's got to be among the oldest 10, let's put it that way. So we'll see. And as far as us not doing well there, I mean, both teams have gone in opposite directions in terms of talent, basically, and balance. I mean, this year, Tampa has the number 4 offense. They've been to 2 World Series, and they had pitching both times. They just didn't have the offense to get it done. And now they have offense. And, I mean, you look at guys like Yandy Diaz, Josh Lowe, I'm drawing blanks, but they've got a pretty robust offense that can do a lot of damage. And they've done that to us. So the Red Sox, I mean, we haven't been terrible offensively. Last year we struggled with the long ball, but it's mostly been pitching for us. Isak Paredes, half of MLB fans have never heard of this guy. He's gonna probably finish the season with over 30 home runs, maybe 35. He'll be a 35-110 guy, basically. And Randy Arozarena, if I had like a top five list of players I'd love to have, he'd be in the top five. I love his energy. I love how he shows up in the postseason. He even in what year was it? 2020. I mean, that was his coming out party. And he was pretty good last season as well. Had some big moments. So they've been pretty good. And who cares about Wander Franco at this point? I mean, they're still, their trajectory isn't any different. So I think that's why they're destroying us there.
Yeah, I hate this stadium. I hate Tropicana Field. I lived in Tampa for 5 years, went to college there, went to a bunch of Rays games, mostly when the Red Sox were in town. The stadium's a dump. It's a toilet. It's awful. And worst part is, if you live in Tampa, you've got to drive a good 30 minutes to get there because the stadium's actually in St. Petersburg. It's not in Tampa. So you've got to drive across the interstate. And then that goes from four lanes to two to cross the one bridge that gets you from Tampa to St. Petersburg. So you bottleneck there, you're sitting in traffic, and then you get to go sit in a dome that has not many great amenities. It's too loud because they adopted the stupid cowbell. So you get the drunk Rays fans, you know, clanging the cowbell around in an empty dome stadium. So it's, you know, bouncing off the walls everywhere. It's a terrible experience for a fan, and this is why they end up with 7,000-8,000 at most every night, because even though the team is very good, the team's been good for many years now, getting to that stadium and having to sit there for a game, even though tickets probably only cost like $20, is a miserable experience. And I really do think that now with the Athletics moving, the Rays are the next team that MLB needs to step in and say, no more. Like, this is not working. We can't have baseball games, especially with a good franchise that, for the most part, is pretty well run and competes every year. We can't have you only bringing in 7,000-8,000 fans every night. So I hope they relocate. I've been saying for years I want them to go to Nashville. Nashville, I think, would be a great baseball market for MLB to expand to. Maybe you'd have to do some realignment, but whatever, you can figure that out later. But I just, every time I see a series at the Trop where the Red Sox have to go there, I'm like, something stupid is going to happen. Someone's going to hit the catwalk, or someone like our precious center fielder there is going to lose a ball in the lights, because it's just, it's a weird stadium. It's not built for Major League Baseball. It looks like minor league games should be taking place there, not major league games. So I hope that at some point in the near future, we hear about relocation plans for the Tampa Bay Rays, and, you know, to move them out of that stadium, out of Tampa, to a real city that might actually care about baseball. Because here's the other thing. Having lived there, you people down there in Tampa, you don't care about that team. And you know you don't care about that team. You get your free Rays shirt with your $15 ticket, and you pretend to care, but you really don't. So that team has too much talent, and they're too well run. They deserve real fans in a real stadium. Get them out of that toilet as soon as you can, because it is just, it's the worst stadium in baseball. And it certainly will absolutely hold that title after the Athletics move. So I agree. I think that they're next in line, and I hope it happens soon.
I wonder if Manfred might even force the owner to sell it at some point. You know, that's not unprecedented. One counterpoint to Nashville, I wouldn't hate it if it went there, but I really like Montreal because the market is still there. Like, there's still Expos fans. That there's still stories that are told about that team. And geographically, if you're going to keep it in the AL East, it makes sense. It's just a short plane ride for, you know, Boston and New York, not all that long from Baltimore, and of course Toronto. I just, it's a ready-made fan base already. With Nashville, you're kind of cutting into the Braves fan base a little bit. It might still play okay as long as it stays in the National League, which I'm guessing it will. I mean, excuse me, the American League, rather. But yeah, so we'll see. But I think we're done for 2024 anyway. 2023, excuse me. I don't even know what year it is tonight. That's not a good sign.
Thank God for that. Mike, any other thoughts?
Yeah, if I listen to a lot of reporters and writers who are well connected with Major League Baseball, and they say without a doubt that expansion is coming to Major League Baseball. And with expansion, realignment will come as well with the division. So I agree with Montreal being a destination. I agree with Terry, but I don't think they would necessarily consider it with the idea that we have to keep them in the American League East, because I think 5 to 10 years from now, I don't think Tampa Bay is going to be playing in the American League East, because I don't know what the divisions are going to be. And I think they're going to be all jumbled. It seems like that's going to be I could see that being like Manfred's last thing he really does for the game, is he expands and realigns.
Yeah, and for the record, I love Montreal getting a team again. I would actually put that ahead of Nashville in terms of my wish list. I just think that in terms of capital and in terms of, you know, what's more realistic, I could see the city of Nashville putting more money towards a baseball stadium and towards actually hosting an MLB team more than Montreal will at this point. But we'll see what happens. I do agree with Mike. I think expansion is coming. So could be that we get the best of both worlds, where Montreal and Nashville both have teams at some point in the future, but might be a while.
If expansion does come, I guess it would add, what, one more team to each league? So it would be odd again. Why not just do it like the NBA? Just, you got your Eastern Conference, you got your Western Conference, and you could still go American or National League even. I don't even care. But scrap the divisions and just have the leagues, and then the top six from each one get in, and that's it. That's what I would do.
I love that idea a lot. Yeah. Like, why not just go to conferences? I think it makes the playoff structure all that much stronger, because we'll see it this year. The division winners, like whoever wins their division from the AL Central, is going to be the weakest playoff team in that format.
And would it playoff team? Yeah, it must, I would think.
Yeah, but it's going to be super weak. Whereas if you do conferences, it kind of balances out a little bit more, I think.
You know, one second. But I just want to make sure. Got it up right now. 73, they would not be a playoff team, the Minnesota Twins. Oh, actually, would they? This is where it gets confusing. They would be, yeah, because Texas is ahead of them. They would not be. Texas would be the number six seed. So Minnesota would be out. Audi 5000.
Yep.
Shame on them. All they needed was some bats. They had the pitching, but.
Yep.
The only thing I wonder is with the schedule. Like, if they're trying to keep an even schedule, like, how would that work with, like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, would they have to reduce the games to make it work where you play everyone in the American League three times and everyone in that? Like, I don't know how that would work with the schedule. Because you would want, if you have everybody in one division or one conference, say, you would want the schedules to be fairly equal. So that way it's really a true champion, because everyone in the American League East plays each other the same amount of times. That's why it works. So just the scheduling of that would be quite interesting.
I'm sure they could resolve it.
Yeah. And that could lead to a shorter MLB season, which I also think is on the table for the future. Right? I think at some point the 162 is going to go away. It might start with 140, but you know, I do think that could lead to that discussion as well, which is not the worst thing. I think a slightly shorter schedule, especially if you're going to realign and redo it like that, may not be the worst thing. But we'll see if any of that ever happens. I just get the Rays the hell out of that dump for God's sakes. Just move them somewhere. So with that, we'll move on to number four on our bottom five, and that is going to be the closer for the Red Sox, a one Kenley Jansen, who has not been great his last few outings. He did have one clean inning in game one where pitched pretty well. You know, nothing catastrophic happened, but go back to the Kansas City series. He pitched in the finale of that one. Wasn't a safe situation, which a lot of people were upset about. Pete Abraham, you know, being Pete Abraham, of course, tweeted about it saying, well, Kenley Jansen is showing exactly why closers don't like to pitch in non-safe situations. Yeah, because he gave up two runs and looked very vulnerable. I would counter-argue that by saying if you're a great closer, it shouldn't matter. You just go in and pitch your inning and get it done with. He had troubles in Kansas City, and he had big-time troubles in Tampa Bay. Came in game two. Again, Red Sox took the lead in the 10th, took a 6-5 lead. Jansen comes on. Obviously, Tampa has their ghost runner on. They get a bunt single that wasn't fielded great, but they get an extra runner from that, and then he gives up a missile to Lau, who hits a three-run bomb and walks it off for the Rays, and that is your ball game. So really, two of Jansen's last three outings have not been good. He's looked very vulnerable. He's been hit hard, and it's kind of just you throw it in the same bucket of like this team was so close to contending, to getting right back into that wild card race and potentially making a run, and just certain things fell apart. And now the back end of your bullpen, apart from Chris Martin, is falling apart. Kenley Jansen can't have a clean save anymore. It's just disappointing. Look, he's had a good year. He's under contract for next year as well. I'm fine with that. Very few blips on the radar, but when he does have those blips, they tend to come in bad moments. And this series was one of them. You needed that second win. You know, taking the first two games of a three-game series against the Rays in a position where the Red Sox are right now would have been so crucial. And he comes in and just pukes all over his cleats at the absolute wrong time. So, you know, I'm not like against Kenley Jansen. I'm not against him coming back next year and resuming that closer role. He is under contract, like I said, so fine with that. But these are the games you need, you know, these are the saves you really need. And he just wasn't there. It was very disappointing. And I think it really set them up for, you know, heading into game three, having to face Tyler Glass now with an exhausted bullpen. He just kind of put them in an impossible situation. So not a good outing from him. And honestly, at this point, there's not many more meaningful saves he can lock up for you with the amount of games remaining and how far out of it you are at this point. So that might have been his last chance to really kind of give you what you needed. And he failed, unfortunately. Micah, what are your thoughts on what happened with Jansen this week?
Yeah, this is it was a tough one because, like you said, they really needed it. But I think my problem with Jansen is how he was used, because he's been dealing with that hamstring injury, and you could see it in game one. He kind of grimaced, and then they came out, or game one of the series when he got the save, they came out, they checked on him, but he stayed in. But he threw 21 pitches Sunday in Kansas City in a 7-1 ball game. Like, I know he hadn't worked much prior to that, but you're going to go to Tampa Bay against a team you know you can't beat, and in a stadium that you never win at. So those games, if you're in them, they're going to be tight. So why use Jansen the day before in a 7-1 game? That's what I don't understand, because Tuesday, when he gave up the walk-off home run, you were asking him to pitch 3 days in a row. And there's been a lot of talk this year about Jansen on back-to-back nights, and he hasn't been very good. And he was pretty good on Monday night when he got the save on back-to-back nights. And then you're asking him to go three straight nights. And that just, to me, that seems like a huge ask. Would I have put him in that situation? Absolutely. This is desperation mode if you're the Boston Red Sox. So you have to pitch him. But why did you pitch him against Kansas City? Like, if you're going to say, well, he hasn't thrown in 5 days or whatever it was, okay, that's fine. But what's one more day of rest to make sure he's ready for Tampa Bay? That's what I don't understand. Like, I would want Jansen to be fully rested going into Tampa rather than to make sure he gets some work in a 7-1 game going into Tampa. That's what I didn't understand. And to me, it kind of set him up to fail in that second game, especially with the Manfred man starting the inning at second base. Holding runners on is a major struggle for Jansen. So just adding that element to it, that inning, he was terrible. It seemed like he was going to give up a home run much sooner than that because every pitch he was throwing was right down the middle of the plate. He was not locating anything. But he was out there. He was giving it his all. And, I mean, I've enjoyed Jansen this year, but I don't understand the usage over the last couple of days. I made no sense to me. And to me, it set them up to be not prepared for Tuesday night. And then if they were in the game today, he would have been unavailable. So I just don't know how you can go into today's game expecting to win when you don't have Martin or Jansen available. That seems like such a tall task, especially when Glasnow's on the mound.
Terry.
I was just shocked at how fast it ended. It was just bing, bing, boom, out. I mean, like that Will Ferrell line from Anchorman, you know, boy, that escalated quickly. It was fast. And aside from that, in the eighth inning, you saw Jansen up and starting to get loose. He still had his hoodie on, so he wasn't throwing necessarily. But by all indications, he was going to be pitching the ninth. And then all of a sudden, it was Schreiber. And I'm at the point in the season where I want to be mad about everything. And I was trying to make up my mind. I'm like, well, is this a good move? Save him for extras with the Ghost Runner? And I just thought to myself, I'm like, well, I'm not going to like anybody in extras anyway, so I guess I'm fine with it. And the frustrating thing about that game was the Rays gave the Red Sox so many opportunities to win it, and the Rays, you know, blew it, you know, when they tried going home with Lowe there in the Brandon Lau in the 10th inning, and he got gunned down by like 20 feet. I was like, you know, they tried so hard to blow that game, it felt like. And then the Red Sox were the ones that ended up blowing it. But as far as Jansen goes, he's had 33 opportunities to record a save, and he's recorded 29 of them, so he's blown 4. And I'm just curious, like, if we were better and we were able to hand him more ninth innings with a lead, would he be worse? I don't know. I don't know who the real Kenley Jansen is at this point. But on the other hand, he's still a massive upgrade over what we were dealing with last year. We didn't know who the closer was the whole season last year. So I don't hate it either. Like Jason said, we've got him next year. I don't expect he's going to be a huge liability. We also have Martin under control next year as well. So I don't see a ton changing there. Interestingly, you know who we didn't see the whole series? Garrett Whitlock. Yeah. So I just thought that was interesting. I don't know if he's working through stuff or not, but it is what it is. And it's like he sleepwalked into that 11th inning and took the Rays about 60 seconds to get the walk and then get the ball over the fence.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's an interesting note about Whitlock that we didn't see him at all this series. But who knows with him? Maybe he's just hurt again.
And, he could be. Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me either.
Why couldn't he pitch that ninth inning against Kansas City? Let's see, Eddie pitched. Wow, he didn't even pitch the Kansas City series. Yep. Yeah. Wow. Interesting. I wonder what where they
7-1 game. You don't trust him to go in there?
Mm. Yeah. Let's see. When was the last time he pitched? Oh, that's the Rays. I'm going backwards. Let's see. I'm going through my... What series is this? This is the... Astros series. He did pitch. So game three of the Astros series was the last time he pitched, and I don't think it was good either. Let's see. 2 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. So not a great outing for Whitlock. So, we'll see. Yeah. I mean, we got Baltimore coming up. That's probably not a good series for him, but.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they're doing there. If they're just protecting him or, I don't know, they're pseudo shutting him down. Not sure, but it's a fair point. Like that 7-1 game against in the Kansas City finale, like, why not pitch him there instead of throwing your closer in who you know can't pitch that many days in a row and you've got an important Tampa series coming up? Definitely some second guessing to go there. So Jansen, not the only pitcher who struggled in this series, which will lead us to number three on our list, Terry, who's number three on the bottom five.
I am going with Cutter Crawford, and so many people wanted to defend Crawford because of that second inning. You know, the error happened. He ended up pitching about, it was like 20, 25, maybe even more pitches than he would have had the out been recorded in the outfield there. But at the same time, he wasn't great. His velocity still down from what it was in the first half. He walked 4 guys, so it's not like he was out there and, you know, I mean, I think there was an error tonight with Glasnow on the mound. Was he rattled at all, or did he just quickly get the next out? And I'm not saying Crawford is Glasnow. He might if he ever gets traded to Tampa, but on the Red Sox roster, he's definitely not Tyler Glasnow. Yeah, so just not a good outing, and it's just these are the consequences of not signing better pitching at the beginning of the season. Corey Kluber is going to start a rehab assignment. that came out in the last 24 hours. So maybe we'll just rearrange the chairs on the Titanic and get a Kluber spot start. I think they did say he would be in the bullpen, but we're extremely thin and not a lot of overpowering stuff here from the guys that we are using. So I thought it was basically an automatic loss, and that's basically what it ended up being.
Yeah, fear not. Reinforcements are on the way. Micah, what are your thoughts on Cutter Crawford?
I'm a huge Cutter Crawford fan, but it's been a rough couple starts here now. Looks like probably fatigue. And Crawford is one of those guys that he has very little margin for error when he pitches. So an error like that from Abreu, that just doesn't help him. And then we've talked about it before on previous podcasts when he's pitched that the walks, when he is walking hitters, he just cannot afford that because he's going to give up his fair share of hits. And that's fine. But when you're walking guys on top of it, then I don't see how he has the stuff to really escape those jams that he ends up putting himself in. And I also don't understand in that fifth inning, he gives up a double and then he walks a guy and then he walks another guy and then Joe Jakes comes in. Like, why are you bringing Joe Jakes in the bases loaded with zero margin for error? I don't understand that. Like, why leave Crawford in to, I guess they were trying to get him through the fifth inning, but why leave him in to walk another batter when he's already struggled with command? And he was at almost 60 pitches through 2 innings. So he was taxed. I just, the putting guys in, it seems to be a reoccurring issue of putting guys in spots where they give up a soft grounder or anything, and it's an automatic run or a couple of runs. Like Joe Jakes hit somebody, which it was ridiculous. I don't want to see Joe Jakes on the 2024 Red Sox, but he hit somebody and a run scores. I don't know why. Like, to me, put Chris Martin in the game in that spot because that game was on the line right there. Like, why put Joe Jakes in the game when the game's on the line? That made no sense. I wouldn't have left Crawford in that long. He definitely was losing it. And, you know, I still think Crawford can start, but we are definitely seeing a pitcher who, with the velocity and everything, it looks like he is at the tail end of what he has left to give to the Boston Red Sox this season.
He's a bulk guy, in my opinion. I mean, that's truly what he should be.
Yeah, and I wouldn't hate that either. I still stand by what I said on the last show where, you know, I would rather have Cutter Crawford as my number five starter than pay, you know, too much for a Giolito or have Bloom hand out another prize-winning $10 million contract to some aging bum who's going to get hurt, you know, 2 weeks into the season and we'll never see him again. But Crawford is limited. And I think now you're just looking at a guy who's he's exhausted. You know, he's never pitched this much. He's been asked to do a lot for this team this year. And yeah, like the defensive team behind him, let's face it, it's garbage. It's one of the worst defensive Red Sox teams we've ever seen in our lifetime. So for a guy like him who he can miss bats at times, but when he's up against a good team like Tampa Bay that, you know, has patient at bats and, you know, knows how to exploit a pitcher like him, he's going to give up contact. And when your defense behind you is just so awful and just, you know, hurts the pitcher so much, it makes Crawford's life that much more difficult. And then he has to throw more pitches and there's stress pitches because there's runners on base. And all of a sudden he's out of the game after 80 or so pitches because he has to be. You don't want to burn him out. I totally agree with what Mike said, though. Bringing in Joe Jakes in that situation, bases loaded, and that's who you go to? Are you kidding me? Like, and I get Cora's trying to play the matchups, left-handed batter coming up. I still would rather have Chris Martin in that spot. Joe Jakes, and of course, first pitch hits him right in the back. And the rest of the inning just fell apart after that. It's like, so that's not so much a Crawford thing, that's a Cora thing, but that was just, that irritated me so much for a manager who is all about, I want to win now, but hey, bases are loaded with two outs. Who should I bring in? Oh yeah, Joe Jakes, this nobody who is a journeyman, barely a major league player. Let's bring him in. That's great. That really works.
Joe Jokes. I think that's what his name is. Joe Jokes.
Seriously, it might as well be at this point. It was just such awful decision-making. And it just, again, it just completely screws over Cutter Crawford and the effort that he put in. So I'm not like, and when I say that I want him to be the number five starter next year, that's not me saying that I'm fully invested in Cutter Crawford. That's just me assuming that Chaim Bloom or whoever is in charge of the offseason is not going to go out and add three new starting pitchers to this rotation, because that's what you need. If you don't want Cutter Crawford being your number five starter, you need to add at least two or three solid MLB arms in the offseason. I don't see Chaim Bloom or whoever's in charge doing that. So I just assume Cutter Crawford is going to take over the Nick Pivetta role, and he's going to be your number five / bulk guy, and that's the way it's going to be. So I don't hate the guy. I don't hate his talent. I think there's a little something there, but the ceiling's not all that high. He may have already reached it, frankly. He's a very average pitcher, and the Red Sox, with the position the roster is in and the position that they're in, they're asking way too much of him. And that's kind of what you see in this last month. It's just they're trying to squeeze too much out of that orange and there's nothing left. So we'll see what his role is next year, but I hope they utilize him a little bit better.
Theo Epstein would add two to three starters. That's a teaser for round table. Lots of possibly Bloom getting fired talk and some rumors surrounding possible replacements. As far as Jakes, that was a lefty-lefty matchup, but why not go with Bernardino? Not that that's necessarily perfect, but I mean, your confidence level is still higher with him trying to get that last out. And you went to him anyway later in the game, so it's not like he wasn't available. So I don't understand what's going on, but Micah will lead us into some more confusion, I guess. So,
yeah, Micah, who do we got coming at number two? He was a key part of that Cutter Crawford start, unfortunately.
Yeah, number two is Willy Abreu, and it was a tough series for him. Definitely probably the worst we've seen him in his short time with the Sox. He was 1-for-10, and he had a crucial error in game two on when Crawford was pitching on the fly ball, dropped it, looked like some miscommunication with Yoshida, and next thing you know, three runs come in, and Crawford's at 60 pitches, and it was out of control. And something I was listening to the Athletic podcast that has Keith Law. Now I know how some fans think of Keith Law and his baseball knowledge, and that's fine. But they were talking about just recent call-ups, and they brought up Abreu, and he's like, I think it's a good idea that they brought him up. But just no scout really thinks he's going to be much of anything. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because I think there's been a lot of buzz among Red Sox fans that he could be a starting outfield option. And I personally am high on him. I think there is something in the bat, but I do think maybe we need to pump the brakes a little bit with Abreu, because, you know, we saw Tristan Casas, who was one of the top prospects in baseball, and he struggled for months. And Abreu is by far not anywhere near a top prospect. So we can only assume that he's probably going to struggle in his first time in the big league. So that's on Abreu in this series. But what I don't understand is, why are we seeing Abreu as a center fielder? I don't understand that, because they called up Rafaela, and he's their third ranked prospect in the system. And he's supposed to be this gold glove center fielder that they don't seem to want to put in center field. That doesn't make any sense to me, because the defense has been atrocious all season long. And that includes center field. Center field hasn't been very good, because Jarren Duran played a lot of center field. And despite his improvements, he hasn't had a good defensive season in center field. So why not improve one of the most important positions on the diamond and put Rafaela in center field? I don't understand that. Rafaela also, like, we're trying to get him at bats, I would think, and putting him, has he started a game in center field? I know he's gotten in the game as a defensive replacement, but I don't recall a game where he started center field.
I don't recall one either.
So, like, what are they doing? Like, why not? He should be trying to get as many ABs as possible to try to get those jitters out and try to build some comfort. And he came in today. Yes, it was against a lefty, but came in today and doubles right down the left field line. And I don't understand. He had three hits yesterday. Ride the hot hand. He was scorching hot in AAA. So I just don't understand not playing him. The only thing I can think of is they're trying to showcase Abreu to try to build up his trade value to move him in the offseason. But I don't think that's worth it. I would much rather see you give Rafaela the ABs, and you shore up a spot in the outfield that, you know, okay, I don't have to worry about the ball going out to center field because I got my best defender out there. And you worry about Abreu's value in the offseason, because Abreu is not going to be the centerpiece of a trade. He's not. He's going to be the second or third piece of a trade. So I don't see building his trade value much right now. But I don't know. I've been a Cora supporter all season long, and there's been so many head scratching decisions over the last couple of weeks. And I even the explanations he gives, they don't make much sense to me. And this is another one. I want Rafaela in the lineup every day. If you want to play him some games at shortstop, fine. But if he's going to be your center fielder of the future, why not give him time to figure out center field, and especially at Fenway Park? I don't understand it.
Terry.
If Seydon Rafaela starts center field yesterday, the Red Sox most likely win the game. So the fatal error took place when the lineup card got filled out prior to the game. So another thing that's hilarious is our former co-host, Andrew Dwan, chirped me yesterday because I had a tweet saying, if your center field prospect was playing center field in all caps, Crawford would have been out of the inning at 30 pitches with a 0-0 score. And apparently Abreu has more starts in the outfield than Rafaela does. But what he didn't point out was the ability level. One's probably barely an average outfielder defensively. The other one, a potential gold glove perennial outfielder. So we probably win the game if Rafaela is out there. You had plenty of options in the infield if you didn't want to start Trevor Story. You could have, I don't know if Urias did start, but you could have worked it out one way or the other as far as getting a middle infielder in there. But is what it is. There's a lot of fatigue. I don't doubt that with especially Alex Cora. I mean, he's had to work harder than any other manager in Major League Baseball. And I'm not a Cora guy. I'm kind of hoping we'll have a new manager next year. But man, this season has felt like a lifetime.
Yeah, and as far as that ultra witty response we got to our podcast account, it was actually dumber than you painted it as, because what he actually said, I guess these are the real numbers, is that Rafaela has started in center field 88 more times than Willier Abreu. Okay, that's half a season. That's more than half an MLB season. So what does that tell you? That tells me that Rafael is more of a center fielder than Willier Abreu. And yeah, I agree with you. If he was starting in center field, that error probably doesn't happen. And that game may have changed drastically because of that. So yeah, screw us for not knowing the exact number of games that Rafael is starting center field, but I'm pretty sure everything about him is, this is your future starting center fielder. This is the guy that you're going to have to make room for at some point. And instead, we're going to take Willier Abreu, who's a corner outfielder, and put him in center. That makes no sense. And when I first saw this all happen, I didn't see the play. I just assumed it was Tropicana Field doing Tropicana Field stuff. I thought the ball hit a rafter or hit a light or a catwalk or something. No, he just lost it. He just lost the ball because he's not a natural center fielder. And he shouldn't have been there in the first place. So it's okay to say that. It's okay to admit that this guy, Willier Abreu, who you got in the Vasquez trade, yes, the bat looks like it could turn into something. Yes, like, he's a young kid. He can still grow. He's a corner outfielder. He's not a center fielder. Rafaela should be playing center field. The fact that he is playing shortstop more than he's playing center field makes no effing sense. Especially since we've been told now Trevor Story is a shortstop. He's not a second baseman anymore. Nope, just kidding. He's a shortstop now. So it makes no sense to me that you have Abreu in there playing center field where you know he's not comfortable with, you know it's not a natural position for him, and it came back to bite you. And yeah. Of course, we're going to point out this kid, Sadan Rafaela, who is a higher-ranked prospect than Abreu, and I think is a bigger part of your future than Abreu, is sitting on the bench while this guy's fumbling around in center field. Doesn't make sense.
Abreu is actually the number 17th-ranked prospect. Rafaela's number 3. And over the winter, there's been some comparisons with Rafaela to Mookie Betts. And I think we can all agree, maybe that's, asking a lot, but aside from that, all the reports about his defense describe him to be as elite. And the bigger question is his bat. So all the more reason he should have been, in center field.
Yeah, no question. It's just, again, it's your number 3 ranked prospect who is supposed to be defensively very good. That was the whole thing we heard until the bat exploded, was that, hey, he's got a great glove, but we just don't know if he's going to be able to hit. Then he went to AAA and he started to hit. Best of both worlds. put him in center field. Like, what are we wasting our time for at this, especially at this point? You only have so many games left before the off season comes. Cause let's face it, you're not going to have an October. So put him out there. It's so dumb. It makes no sense. And it's just, again, just Cora screwing around. And Abreu cost you a lot of runs in that game. And as far as his future, he looks like he has a decent bat. He could be a decent player, but Rafaela is clearly the better prospect. It's time to feature him a little bit more. So with that, we'll round out our bottom five. Terry, who's coming in at number one for this series?
Number one would be a guy who's been really in our good graces for much of the past month, but he had a terrible series, and that's going to be Adam Duvall. 1-for-13, he struck out five times. He struck out nine times in those 13 at-bats. Game three in the finale, he got a golden sombrero, so he struck out four times in one game. Justin Turner also did as well, surprisingly. We didn't put him in the top five because, you know, he's the closest thing to Jesus on that roster. But redheaded Jesus, obviously. But anyway, so Duvall just not a great series. There was two key at-bats with him. And it must have been in the eighth inning of game two. Bases loaded. And he had two strikes. And he gets caught looking on a ball that ended up basically being middle. And then tonight in the finale, I can't remember if it was Fairchild that got him or if that was the inning before. But again, same thing. Key spot, runners on base. Gets absolutely frozen and just some of the worst at-bats we've seen from him all year. Now, Tampa, you know, it's obviously the mecca of MLB pitching programs. And I think a good, like some of us wonder, or I've wondered if perhaps Cleveland might be a little better because they've had some Cy Young winners come up. But watching Savali go from Cleveland to Tampa and how effective he's been. I think he struck out 11 or 12 of us in game two. That seals it for me. Tampa is the best pitching program in Major League Baseball. I don't think there's any dispute now, but so I'm not shocked that there was a ton of strikeouts, but man, just to freeze these guys in key spots when they've been nothing but super clutch all year long, making plays to kind of keep our head above water. And they definitely got dunked by Tampa throughout the series. So Duvall, not a great series.
Micah.
Yeah, with Duvall, there's just not a lot of in between. It seems like he's really scorching hot or he's ice cold. And there are a lot of holes in Duvall's swing. And Tampa seems like the ideal pitching staff and organization to say, okay, I see holes in his swing here. This is the area we're going to attack him with and see if he can fix it and see if he can beat us that way. And he didn't beat them at all. So I think it's just a tough series. You know, he wasn't going to stay hitting a home run four times a week. That wasn't going to continue. But definitely in game two, he had some opportunities there, and it was costly that he didn't come through. So tough series, but definitely not the reason why the Red Sox lost the series. He was one of the reasons, but not the reason. But we had to pick somebody at number one, and when you're 1-for-13 with 8 Ks, it's an easy target.
Yeah, we got the bad Adam Duvall this series, and this is not a series where you needed bad Adam Duvall. He just looked lost. You know, just he was looking at pitches right down the middle that any other day he just flicks his wrist and he can send them 450 feet. I don't know if it's just that it was a bunch of pitchers he didn't know, and if he wasn't properly prepared, or he just was kind of zoning out. I'm not sure. But yeah, he disappeared on you, and bad time to disappear, because, you know, people have been talking about it, and I think it's true. If it weren't for that wrist injury, he would have had maybe a career year here in Boston, given the way that his second half has gone once that wrist got fully healed. But yeah, this was just a weird series where he just looked, he looked like the Adam Duvall when he first got back from the injury, just lost, just flailing at pitches, and then looking at pitches right down the middle and striking out. So this is who he is. He's been in the league a long time. He's a high strikeout guy. When he's hot, he's, you know, infamous. He's, you know, someone nobody wants to see. But when he's cold, you can strike him out on three pitches pretty easily. You can fool him. Just get him to chase the fastball and then drop a curveball right in his lap, and he'll look at it. So, you know, it's too bad that he disappeared. Again, this is not a guy that emotionally it's not worth investing in too much. He's not going to be here beyond this year, I don't think. I know there's some growing sentiment to keep him around. I just don't see a spot for him with Rafaela knocking on the door, especially. So I think he's gone after this year. Wish we could have gotten more out of him. The wrist injury really set him back, but you know, he'll land somewhere. He's a good player when he's healthy, and he's a good player when he's on. But you saw a series here in Tampa where he was not on. He was just a little bit off, a little bit unfocused, and just came at the wrong time for this team, because they need every single game matters. Every single at bat matters right now if they even want to have a prayer of getting in. And he was not there this series. So it's unfortunate, but that's the way it goes sometimes. So with that, we will wrap up this episode. Keep an eye out for our Bastard Series prediction show. We'll be giving our predictions for the Baltimore Orioles series this weekend. Another big one coming up. Going to be a tough one, but we'll see how that goes. And we'll have our Bastards Roundtable episode as well. We'll address some of those rumors about the chief baseball officer position. Theo Epstein's name was thrown in. There were some other names thrown in. What does the future hold for this organization with that? That'll be out on Friday. And then the weekend crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap the Baltimore Orioles series. So until then, everyone, have a good weekend and take care.